whatever, we can hear you, so maybe we can proceed. Are you okay with this? All right. Well, first of all,
okay,
thank you so much. Well, again, it's truly a pleasure to introduce today Dr. Christopher Gans. He's in the Group Service R&D Manager at ABB Technology, that's in Zurich, Switzerland. He obtained his degree in electrical engineering and PhD in automatic control at ETH, that's a famous institute, the IFA, Institute for Automatic. He also has an MBA degree from the International Institute of Management Development Business School in Lausanne, and he's responsible for cross-division projects in the area of digital and service, and these include Internet of Things, artificial intelligence initiatives. He's also been involved in developing ABB's digital strategy, and he's a member of the group technology management team. And he's a very well-known speaker worldwide, so it's truly a privilege for us to be able to have Dr. Christopher Gans to talk to us. So, Christopher, I'd like to welcome. Thank you so much. And again, so as you can see, the title is Industrial AI for Autonomous Industries at ABB. So, Christopher, welcome. It's all yours. Thank you.
Thank you very much. So I will give you a brief overview over where ABB is in the digital strategy and what this means for the future of our automation business. We're actually in interesting times these days. We're facing a number of disruptions out in the market. There's the energy revolution with more and more renewables, and there's also the fourth industrial revolution going on that is significantly changing the way that the industries are behaving. In the middle of all that is actually ABB serving to utilities, industries, transport, and infrastructure with our offerings. So this is really at the core of what we are doing here. When we look into how digitalization is going on in the world market, then we see that those who are furthest ahead are finance, insurance, media, and software industry. But keep in mind that these are the industries where their complete offering has become digital. So the newspapers, TV stations, and all that has completely become digital. Music industry is just sending files around the internet. There's no longer CDs in the whole value chain. Whereas the industries that are typically served by ABB are those where this is probably not going to be the case. Railroads, automotive, buildings, and all that. It's probably going to be stay physical until we are fully transferring in the virtual world with virtual reality. So for ABB, therefore, having an automation system in most of these industries is a good foot in the door when addressing the digital needs of these customers. And when we look into what an automation system is doing, and I'm preaching to the choir here, we do measurements, we do control, we do center control signals back to the plant, and that we do on various levels, on operations, and also in maintenance, we do collect plant health data, and or then as a feedback to the plant, we are sending a service technician back to the plant. So basically, since we are in the automation industry, we have been in digital for the last few decades, but this has not been recognized as being that. So in essence, ABB is deeply skilled in the basic control loop, sense, analyze, and act. That is pretty much what we're doing. Now, if you look into some of the messages around digitalization, people talk about collecting data from the plant, analyzing it, and coming up with fantastic insights. But actually, that's what you can already do with an automation system, actually to a much larger extent than many people who are talking about IoT think. Just let's look at a few examples here, projects that have been executed by ABB. One is the biggest ever automated plant. That's a Saudi Arabian refinery, Sadara project, 150,000 connected devices that continuously send data to the control system and that are continuously analyzed, not only for control, but also for production optimization. So fairly high level of digitalization within this plant. There are others, for example, in mining. This is a mine in Sweden, where we together with the customer were able to create the most efficient mining operation worldwide by doing such things as mine ventilation optimization, where we only pump air into the caverns where somebody is actually operating, and we close down those caverns where nobody is in, significantly reducing the amount of energy spent. And by having the capabilities to direct the air through the mine, we can actually also pump the air into the tunnel that was blasted last, and we can blow out the air the poisonous air much faster, so people can go back to work much quicker. So, highly digitalized mine, all done with conventional automation systems. Another example I would like to show is this one. And this is actually not a mine. This is a data center. This is a Norwegian data center that's actually put into a mine. And the ABB contribution here is that we provide the electrical infrastructure for that, and we optimize that. So if people ask ABB, are you in the data center business, and are you providing cloud services, then we can say, well, yes, we do provide cloud services, but actually not. We don't build the cloud, but actually hardly any cloud in the world would operate without ABB equipment, because most of these players that provide these cloud services actually are our customers and are relying on ABB's electrical equipment to provide power to the cloud. So the cloud is actually working on top of or supplied by our equipment. So that said, we have been in this basic control loop automation for decades, and you all know the automation pyramid, that is what we have been doing in the past, sense, analyze, and act. So what is all this IoT cloud story about? In essence, all our customers, they work in an ecosystem. They all work together with other customers. They work together with us when it comes to service. So now, even though you might have a lot of data available inside your operations, you might still need to make that data available to someone else to cooperate with, and that is where the whole cloud comes into play. Now, if everybody could please go on mute, particularly the person who's just gone outside, that is creating noise into the land. Thank you. So there is actually a need to push data up into the cloud, and in ABB's case, this is called ABB Ability. That is our cloud solution for IoT. So customers can use the cloud to analyze their data, but also to collaborate with others, and I have a few examples on that in the rest of the deck here. So what does it look like? You have the data available in ABB Ability, you combine it with other data, and you run analytics on top of that. We use it mostly for service centers, where our service engineers look into what's happening, to look into, are things operating normal, and if not, then we can send somebody on site very quickly. So one part of it is quick and efficient resolution of issues by collaborating with the customer to address issues that are in operation. But then, of course, that data can be used for further applications, for consulting the customer in how to best operate this plant, and also maybe to allow access for third-party service providers to make more sense out of the data than just use it for maintenance and failure prediction. So we can, in addition to the resolution of issue, predictive maintenance, we can also use the data for operational effectiveness, and I guess many of you have done that before. So let's dive into one of the applications here. This is from our marine industry. This is how we run it. We are operating a collaborative operation center where we monitor the technology on the vessel, The vessel, of course, is operating and is trying to be in the next port in time, but the customer also has an operation center where he manages his whole fleet of vessels around the world. And these two then collaborate together to have the most efficient operations possible. What we do here, one is, here's the picture of the Norwegian operation center where somebody is monitoring several hundred vessels around the world. We're monitoring, for example, energy efficiency, safety, and we do condition monitoring on the electrical equipment. But more and more, we have also moved into operational optimization, like route optimization, based on conditions and wave conditions. We can detect the motion of the ship. Here we say zero damage to cargo. In the case of cruise ships, it also tells you how seasick the customers will get, and you can actually optimize the route so that fewer people get sick. And then you can optimize the trim of a vessel so that less fuel is consumed. So, as I mentioned, we more and more move into a collaborative optimization, avoid the downtime, but also help the customer resolving issues. But this is at the core of the NV Digital strategy to find and support the customer in these collaborations around different industries. We have these collaborative operation centers now rolled out into several industries, not just marine. Moving on here, we show that we do sense and analyze and act in the automation system, which is good for steady state control, and in some cases also start the operation transit and some stops. For example, power plants, they can operate pretty much automatically. In other industries, you need more manual interaction, particularly for start, stop, and transients. But if we actually want to expand that into a more autonomous operation, then we need to add more to the typical automation loop. And you need to be able to move from sense to perceiving the situation, from analyzing it and actually understanding it, and from acting according to predefined patterns we need to get towards solving. And with that, we then hope to be able to cover the complete plant life cycle with an expanded automation system. Now, in order to do that, we need more than just automation. We need to move into artificial intelligence. Artificial intelligence is a tool that will help us moving from sensing to perception, to use cameras in sensing, to use all kinds of sensors to get there, in order to understand it, what is currently what we refer to as mainstream AI, the image recognition, video recognition, voice recognition. It's probably no longer gonna suit the purpose. And then in the end, to solve things in an industrial environment, we'll probably need something that we refer to here as industrial AI, that is going beyond what's currently possible with artificial intelligence. On top of everything, we do see that the human is always capable of supervising what's happening and possibly overriding the action of the AI system. Now, if we look into industrial AI, there are a few properties that are not equivalent to some of the behavior of what we see in consumer-facing AI, particularly when we talk to IT companies. They tell us, well, there's lots of data in industry and you can analyze all that. But actually, we all know that the amount of information that is in that data might actually be pretty low. If you have a power plant that is running on base load for 2 years, you can measure every day, every night, and you always get the same measurement. So you learn relatively little unless something's happening. So you actually need to find those patterns where something happened. within the whole data. So it's, even though you have a lot of data, you might have very little information. Then also, in consumer-facing AI, many applications are actually looking into the average. If you know the behavior of the average consumer, and you can sell more to the average consumer, you can sell quite a lot. You don't really care whether your advertising is seen by a few people who don't like it or will not. Who will not buy it as long as more people in a pitch buy your stuff, then you're happy. In industry, the average is actually something that we already know. The plant is, in average, behaving according the way it has been built. It is behaving according to the physics that were used to build the plant. What we are interested in is actually the rare events, the failures, and let's call it the golden batches where something went particularly well. This is how we want to analyze on how we could do more of that. Here is what we want to analyze. How we can do less of this and with moving lower here, up to the right, we can move the average production upward and create customer value. The last part is industrial sites are pretty dangerous. Quite a bit can go wrong, and that's why we have layered defense. We have safety systems that take care of it, stabilizing controls. And actually, AI today is not guaranteed to work stably and reliably. Therefore, we need to find a way of caging the AI system inside a safety system and make sure that it can actually not harm anyone by taking a strange decision. If you mislabel a cat picture as a dog, that doesn't really hurt anybody. If you don't catch a dangerous situation on site, you might be in trouble. So industrial AI requires, in some cases, different approach to what consumer AI is doing. Also, many of the successes that you've seen in AI in recent years were along computer games. Well-defined rules, well-defined environments with little interaction with the outside. So these can be handled pretty well. Now, of course, we know that reality might be pretty much more complex, even though the chess is a reflection or a game about battles. I'm not sure whether it would have helped Napoleon if he had been a good chess player to win the Battle of Waterloo. In investigating for this presentation, I learned that Napoleon was, by the way, a pretty bad chess player. So no wonder he lost. Still, complexity of the industrial reality might be pretty high. And what I already mentioned, we already know quite a bit about what's happening. If you get these data points here and you run this through an AI system, you might find that it's actually sinusoidal. But if you already know that there's a sine wave underlying and you subtract that sine wave from that data here, you realize that there's actually a pattern below that if you take away what you already know that is revealed when you look into what you don't know. So we actually need to combine what we already know, the physics, the domain knowledge, the modeling. We need to combine that with the data science, the AI, and combine that into something that is building on the best of both worlds. So here we have a simulation of a vessel coming into the harbor. Here is what the autopilot is seeing, and in the end, we arrive at a vessel that can voyage on its own autonomously. So that said, we talked a lot about making systems more autonomous, how we can use AI to drive towards autonomy. But what I also said was that we still need the human in the whole loop to supervise and possibly interfere if something's going wrong. And here is another value, what we see in AI, that more and more data that is fed to the operator, and more it becomes confusing to find out what's actually going on in a plant of increasing complexity. The guy here to the left, he probably had some 20 valuables to look at, and he could operate the complete plant with a few levers and dials here. More and more information was fed later on to the operators. Even though if they have a very nice screen, less and less they see through what's actually going on within the plant. So we do need, the more data we get through IoT, the more we need to have the AI and the data systems to support the operator in finding out what's going wrong and giving him advice. So in the future, a combination of human perception capabilities, machine perception capabilities, need to combine to make more sense of what's going on and handle situations efficiently and effectively. So coming again back to the marine example, we see here that we can support the captain here with more measurements, more forward-looking simulations, how his vessel will behave, how other vessels will behave, whether they will cross the path of the ship. And we can actually relieve the pilot from constantly looking at the horizon with some binoculars and giving him warnings if something is showing up, and even advising on how to move the cruise vessel smoothly into the harbor and parking it sideways with the help of the azipod monitors. So the captain, from looking at the sea, sees a different picture here. I mean, he's already used to seeing the radar picture, but now it's blended into his reality by having a view of the future in his view. So when we come to closing the loop and acting solving problems, many people say that robots are the way to go. And in some literature, robots are actually seen as a part of artificial intelligence. When we then see pictures of robots, people normally put a two-armed creature with eyes and head. But actually, those robots can at most do what humans can do, maybe faster, more precisely. But if we look into robots that are not shaped according to human examples, but shaped to do the task, we might actually be able to do more. Here, that's a data center sheriff that is moving up and down the data centers and is capable of replacing server blades here. This guy here can crawl into the air gap in a large motor and provide camera images from the inside without removing the rotor from the stator. Here, this one is a transformer oil submarine. In transformers, when something's gone wrong, we need to drain the oil, the isolating oil. We need to send somebody in there. It's a pretty unpleasant environment. And now we can leave the oil in. We can send the transformer in that is sliding along, and we can look at what's happening within the transformer without draining the oil. And then, of course, you have drones that can go pretty much where people cannot go, with also carrying thermal cameras, radars, LIDARs, to find more information on from a plan. So if we talk about robots, robots do not always need to look like R2-D2 or similar science fiction inventions. Now, industrial autonomy is a little bit more complex, or is slightly different from autonomous vehicles. So we looked into how could we define autonomy levels for industry. We've come up with a similar level systems in the automotive industry has, but more and more moving tasks from humans to the machine, always assuming, as you've seen in my intertwined circles, that the automation system is still there and actually doing its task of keeping the plant stable and safe while the AI system is autonomously running the more complex processes. So, in conclusion, AI is not replacing the automation system, but it's actually helping to expand the automation system's capability towards handling more unplanned situations. What is actually key is to seamlessly interact between AI and the automation systems and the design systems that are comprising actually aspects of both. What I can't stress enough is the need for having correct, consistent, and complete data available. Without that, I don't think about doing anything on AI or data-driven algorithms. And what we also see is that the interaction between humans and the AI system results in an augmented expert that is then creating the best of both worlds. In summary, what we actually have to say is that AI is just one of the tools that we're going to employ for autonomous industries. There are others, there are more conventional ones, more advanced ones, but in the end, it's always relevant. What is the customer's challenge? What does the customer want to achieve? And then we'll use whatever tool that is suitable to address this challenge. And with that, even though we have started late, I've raced through my presentation so that we have now sufficient time for further questions.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Christopher. So thank you. And, I think we do have, obviously, time for questions. So first, audience out there, anybody would like to ask a question to Dr. Christopher Gans? Usually we have them to be a bit shy. So let me start asking you the following question. In your slide 25, I think you showed level 5 being a totally autonomous system. And I don't mean to be, overcritical, but the little I've seen of AI is I would not trust, quite frankly, at least the current AI systems in the sense, even from a mathematical point of view, they have some really important limitations and flaws. And to give you one example, at least right now, I would absolutely not fly an airplane that would be flown by AI, because I'm pretty sure the chances of crashing would be pretty high. And sorry, this is just meant to be a little bit provocative, but again, so my question is, how realistic is it really to reach that level 5 and, assume that humans will be absent and AI, so to speak, will be, taking care all of this, and especially given the fact that, again, you didn't have, of course, the chance to talk a little bit more about the actual AI techniques, but, it doesn't seem like they have at the end. I mean, yes, of course, there's been a lot of progress, no question about it, but, a very cynical view of AI is that basically a grandiose parameter estimation problem. So can you comment on that? And sorry, sir, for being a little bit provocative, but, yeah.
I agree. And I would like to point out two things. One is we're not on this slide here. We're not talking about AI. We're talking about autonomous industries. And as I said, that might comprise many other technologies as well. If you're sitting in an airplane, most of the time, you would actually be flown by an autonomous system. The pilot is just having dinner and is not really taking care of what the airplane is doing for most of the time. So a fully automated flight actually is possible today. To really handle all possible situations, I agree, it's not yet there. I agree to your view on AI. It's a statistical method with definitely not matching the expectation that are there in the general public. I also say that even in the automotive industry, they have defined level 5, but they are absolutely not sure and they're giving no commitment at all when they will reach it. In industry, I could imagine some applications where we can reach a fairly high level of autonomy under some circumstances, but in others, it's really still far out, and I agree that I could not imagine that current AI is addressing this ever, but maybe we'll arrive at some new algorithms that would actually get us there. So yes, I quite agree with your observation here, stating that this is not just for AI, it's for autonomous, and this is a vision, and visions have an aspect of maybe never be reachable. But still, we need to set goals that are
fairly obviously, I think it would be highly desirable, as you mentioned, and I'm pretty sure that, you know, we're obviously getting much closer to that. The other question, if I can ask, I don't mean to monopolize here, you had one slide earlier where you talk about having first principles type of models and then data. And I don't know if you know Professor Venkat Subramanian from Columbia University. He was here giving a seminar. I was also talking about the need for somehow combining those two. But can you maybe comment on what it would take? In other words, is it just a question maybe of using data to fit the appropriate parameters for the first principle models? Or is there something more to this, let's call it hybrid modeling between domain knowledge and data science?
Well, there are some effects, particularly in material fatigue, aging, that are very difficult to model and that really, in the end, show some chaotic behavior. Right. It's very difficult to really predict. So in these areas, we found that going for more data-driven approaches is actually a far easier approach. You don't gain a lot if you get full physical insight into what's happening. It's sufficient if you have a fairly good understanding of what's happening. But that, in order to get there into these into those aging effects, you need to subtract all the effects you already know. So it really depends on the effort you want to spend in doing the physical modeling and what precisions you need for your application. And there, I think it's a huge gray area in between that really depends on the use case. What makes most sense, what is mostly most economically feasible in the approach.
Right. Yeah, I think the example of aging components is without question a very good one, because that's clearly one that benefits a lot from purely data. On the other hand, in the chemical process industry, there's a huge amount of domain knowledge of first principles. I mean, if we think about process simulators, the Aspens of the world, and Fluent and all these type of systems, so there is a fair amount of models that are available. So that's why I was raising the question, if you at the ABB have some vision on how to do this combination, because that's what I still find a little difficult to think how it could be done most effectively. And also, by the way, within
simulation is and modeling is still hard. We all know that. So if you do have a good model, stick with it. There's no need to go for AI. Right. But mostly, it's very very hard to get to a good model, and it changes over time. So we have seen that it's not a trivial straightforward task to have good models in operation where you don't have the PhD at hand to reach your end.
Right. Okay. Well, again, I don't want to monopolize anybody either here. Does anybody have a question? Everything's good. What about, again, the audience out there? We do have a number of people who are connected. Anybody would like to ask a question to Dr. Christopher Gans? By the way, they usually tend to be a bit shy, so it's not surprising. Well, we do have a question here from the audience. One of the students, if you want to answer the question.
Thanks for the presentation. In slide 20, you mentioned the hybrid algorithm. So you said that remove the data from model, revealing the unknowns. I'm not sure what it's about. Can you explain this in detail? Because to me, the remaining data are random.
No, the remaining data are actually those that you didn't model. And in this case here, you probably didn't model some that might be sensor drift or material fatigue. So that is showing then what is deviating from your model. And that is actually what you're interested in, because everything else you can already explain with your model. That's exactly what I just explained to Ignacio's question. Those algorithms are better in finding things that are not in the model. Whatever is in the model, you're better off in running through the model. But those algorithms look into those effects that you haven't modeled, that might be external influences that have an impact on your process, that might be internal aging, failure behavior that you haven't modeled.
Okay, thank you.
All right. Any other? Yeah. Do you want to come in? Yeah. We have one more question, Christopher. Yeah.
Okay.
Just come here. Speak up. Yes.
Hello, sir. I have a question in slide 16.
Hello.
I have a question in slide 16, sir. Can you please go to... So I don't exactly understand the difference between the two cycles, sir. So what is the difference between analyze, understand, or act and solve? Aren't those meant to be doing the same thing? Hello?
Sensing is sensing one process variable only. That is a sensor that's giving you one value, temperature, pressure, or whatever. Perceiving is more getting the information about a situation. So a camera might not be able to give you a measurement, but it might give you a lot of information about the situation. Mm-hmm. Similar to understand, analyzing gives you one single result. It's a control variable, or is the good or bad. Whereas understand gives you much more of the context of the process, and then acting is pretty much predefined. This is the value that comes out of the analyze. Here is how you move the robot, or here is how much you open the mouth. Here is what you do. In solving, actually, the action is not predefined. You perceive a situation, you understand what's going on, and then you come to the conclusion how to solve it. So in some industries, everything is pretty much predefined, and you can have most of the situation, and if something bad is happening, then you have your emergency shutdown system that is shutting it off. But if you go, for example, more into this reproduction, and you have a variation in your product, and the robot needs to move slightly somewhere else, or a component is not exactly at the place where you told the robot to pick it up, you need a camera to perceive where the object is. Is it the right object? Maybe there are several objects lying around, and then have the robot pick it, and then finding out where to put it. So it is more complex, and in many of these you need an AI to address it. Yeah. Some of the solve, honestly, we're observing very few algorithms or hardly anything that can solve things that were not observed before. That's where AI is pretty good at. In applying patterns that it has observed before, but to really solve something that has not been observed before, you can't run a plan through all the possible failures. You need more or other algorithms that go beyond what's currently possible.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much, Christopher. Since we're on this slide, I do have the following question, if I may. So one of the issues, as you also pointed out, is sort of the role of using data and maybe using some of the AI systems that these days tend to be largely dominated by neural networks. But one aspect that especially this slide, to me, at least to me, would suggest is also the importance of symbolic logic and reasoning. And for some reason, I remember in the 80s, when the knowledge-based systems started to emerge, there was a greater emphasis on symbolic logic. And somehow, at least for what I've seen lately, that seems to have been somehow I don't see it as much. Looks like it's still very much dominated by more, neural networks and so forth. They do classification and things of that sort, but not really reasoning. So can you comment, this is a good slide, on how you see the importance of symbolic logic and do you actually make use of them, for example, in your vision that you have at ABB?
You have a very good point there, and I do see some advantages in moving towards these algorithms, let's say, again, because they have been there in the 80s, when also the neural networks were invented. These are some of the shortcomings of the current systems of the neural networks. We are observing that all the hype is about deep learning, which is in effect a neural network, but that the methods that you just described, I think, could be very helpful in addressing these issues. But we're not seeing an awful lot of research in this direction, but we're definitely interested in exploring that.
Right. Okay, very good. So again, any other last questions? So let me thank again very much Dr. Christopher again for a very interesting, very futuristic talk, if I may call so. Okay, thank you so much, Christopher. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.